Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Sherwood Anderson's iconic Winesburg, Ohio, is one of the most famous examples in 20th century American literature of writing about place. So what happens when that place happens to be Ohio? Coming up, we'll hear from the director of the upcoming Ohioana Book Festival, which features Ohio-related fiction and nonfiction authors, including the two who join us today in the studio. Andrew Welsh Huggins is a frequent guest on All Sides. He usually joins us as a legal affairs reporter with the Associated Press in Columbus. He has written extensively on capital punishment, the drug trade, and politics. His nonfiction books include No Winners Here Tonight, Race, Politics, and Geography in One of the Country's Busiest Death Penalty States, and Hatred at Home, Al-Qaeda on Trial in the American Midwest. His debut novel, Fourth Down and Out, is now out. It is the first in a series of murder mysteries built around his fictional Columbus private investigator, Andy Hayes. Welcome, Andrew Welsh Huggins.
Good to be here. Thanks.
David Giffels is a six-time Pulitzer Prize nominee. He was born in Akron, where he was a longtime columnist for the Akron Beacon Journal. He teaches English at the University of Akron, creative nonfiction, and the Northeast Ohio Master of Fine Arts program. He is co-author of Are We Not Men? We Are Devo, and Wheels of Fortune, The Story of Rubber in Akron. His book, All the Way Home, Building a Family in a Falling Down House, received widespread acclaim. His latest book is The Hard Way on Purpose, Essays and Dispatches from the Rust Belt. Welcome to the show, David.
Thanks for having me.
One by one, you've watched friends leave Akron and Ohio, where you grew up. Akron, your book describes why they leave, but also why others stay. And it makes Akron sound actually like a really fun place to hang out, especially if you're in an abandoned alley.
Yeah, or a falling down house.
In a falling down house, right. When did the idea of telling Akron's story in this way occur to you?
I can't say that there's a moment that it happened, but, you know, the experience of being a local newspaper columnist, you're constantly engaged with kind of the themes of your place. And, you know, as a local newspaper columnist who was born in an industrial city just at the moment that it stopped being an industrial city and stayed there through all of the phases of my life when I might have left for career or for some kind of opportunity, you know, it made me start to think after a while that I was of a particular type. A third of the population, roughly, has disappeared from Akron in my lifetime. And so I have watched most of my friends leave for one reason or another. And so, you know, you reach middle age and you realize you didn't. And so what's the story of all the people who were born in the same time and kind of place that I was born in the Rust Belt, and who grew up with this theme of brain drain and being told by your parents that you need to leave in order to survive? What's the story of the two-thirds of us who stayed? You know, and so that became kind of this growing theme just at the time I was starting to think about my next book. And that's kind of how it came about. And then just to sort of realize that there is this huge population of people who have been, you know, the story of Ohio for people of my generation has been the story of our best and brightest leaving. You know, LeBron James is the notable young professional who takes off for a better place. You know, he's sort of the bigger than life version of that. But that's been the story of kind of my time. And, you know, so I wanted to look at it from the other side.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Joining me in the studio, authors Andrew Welsh Huggins and also David Giffels. They are both featured authors in the upcoming Ohioana Book Festival. For more information, go to the link at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Andrew, you focus squarely on Columbus and to a lesser extent the surrounding counties that sort of feed into Columbus, but you put a lot of detail into describing the capital city. And was that more about the capital city or more about the it's a mystery crime novel, but the tone of it and all that detail, you read that in a lot of stories like this?
Yeah, I think so. The goal, first and foremost, was to create a mystery that would be enjoyable, that people, whether they live in Columbus or Terre Haute, Indiana, something that they would enjoy. But secondarily, it was to really make Columbus part of the book. I've felt for, you know, I'm the person actually who moved to Ohio, and I've lived in the city now for 16 years. I felt for years it was due for a mystery series. It's a city that's really come into its own. And so I really wanted to interweave Columbus and its high points and some of its low points into this book and into this series.
I remember when I was a columnist for the Dispatch, every once in a while I'd throw in Buckeye something or other, and the hits would go way up on the website because Buckeye Nation extends way beyond. And it was kind of fun to see how it would, you know, go around the world sort of in a 24-hour period. But there is a very strong Buckeye, Ohio State Buckeye theme in the stories. Tell us about that and... Everybody knows about it.
That's right. So my private investigator, Andy Hayes, is an ex-Ohio State quarterback. I felt I wanted a character who was, you know, a sort of a wounded warrior or a fallen angel type person who had something bad in his background. And without giving anything away, he was a great Ohio State quarterback who, like a few other quarterbacks, something he did went terribly wrong, and he became completely disgraced and ended his career. And he has slowly built himself back up, dragged himself out of the gutter, and he's gone to work for a former teammate who's now a defense attorney in Columbus. And it was very important for me I really wanted to make a connection with Ohio State. This series is not an Ohio State series, or it's not an Ohio State football series, but you know, that's so much part of what Columbus is. It just couldn't be ignored. And part of it was my own attempt to sort of figure out what Ohio State football means, like, to me. I'm not really a fan, but certainly observe it carefully, but also to kind of figure out what its place is in the city. And I think I've been able to do that through the character of Andy.
David Giffels, there's a great tradition of staying local in fiction, of course. It starts with the idea of write what you know. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned Sherwood Anderson earlier, but also Faulkner, of course, and many more. Was there an influence for you along those lines when you're looking at a nonfiction approach to this?
As far as staying local?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, one of the things that was really fun about being a columnist and about writing this book is you get to go into your place kind of with the eyes of an outsider, because, you know, when you're a writer, you're looking at things in a particular way, looking for the details that are unusual, even in the most familiar. And so to be in a place like Akron is to always be looking at it as it's a really weird place. And all places are weird when you look at them that way. And so, you know, like, what does it say, this seemingly anonymous city that's the only place in the whole world where the blimp doesn't fly over because it's the Super Bowl, the blimp flies over because it's Tuesday, you know? Like, it's, and, you know, just... this oddball leftovers from the tire industry being there is like this whole science fiction chemistry theme that plays into the research and development of the polymer industry is at the University of Akron. And so there's this weird science. Like, I did wrote a column one time, like, when way back, it was a long time ago, when the movie Flubber came out, the remake of the movie about Flubber. And, you know, I went to the reigning expert in polymer science, and I asked him, like, in a serious way, if flubber could be possible, chemically possible. And he answered me, you know, like, to me, that's like, you know, that you don't get to do that in every job. And so I like, you know, so I liked writing about Akron as a place that was real, but also, you know, like, to find the quirks and the weird parts of it that made it interesting beyond just the local audience.
You know, it's interesting, when I was reading, you know, you were talking about the rubber capital of the world. Mm-hmm. You know, this is Buckeye Nation. This is Buckeye Country. I don't know if it's an American thing, but we like to be able to call ourselves something. I grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which was the Furniture City.
Yeah.
And you can't say that anymore. They don't call it the Furniture City because nobody makes furniture. Well, there's Steelcase, baby, but they don't make rubber in Akron anymore. The Buckeyes are still here, but they always will be, ostensibly. But we like to call ourselves something.
There's I write about this in my book, but this is true, I think, more and more, because America's become so homogenized, and because social media is taking away a certain kind of community that's tangible is this desperation for identity, because, you know, so many places it used to be very easy to be known for something like furniture making or tire building in Akron, or, you know, whatever it is that your town has, you know, on the sign, you know, welcome to so-and-so place, home of such-and-such.
Right.
And those, I don't think those things are as available as they were. There's a chapter in here about Akron's claim to be the birthplace of the hamburger, which is like saying the birthplace of beans or something. And but there are like three other cities that cling jealously to that same claim. Like, we would probably have a turf war if we were closer, because you really, like, I think, you know, certain kinds of places really need that.
Yeah. And Ohio, in Columbus, Andrew, you said you're not particularly a fan, and I'm an outsider as well. I've lived here for 25 years and I'm still an outsider. People say, when are you just going to give it up and become a Buckeye? Like it's the invasion of the body snatchers or something. Just give up. We'll be good to you. Don't worry about it. But you, I love the detail in the story, because it did make Columbus seem like more of a city, more than something bigger than a football team.
Well, I think you've hit it exactly in terms of this idea of places want to call themselves. I mean, Columbus for so long has struggled with that notion of, well, what are we? And it's taken a long time to get past Cowtown, right? And now we're moving towards Cbus, which is like the perfect little name for the Twitter age. But we're still kind of hampered by that Columbus, Ohio. It's like that little annoying Ohio that we always have to put after Columbus.
Right.
And I think part, you know, my goal was to try to show people that this city is more than just Ohio State. It's more than the Buckeyes. It's not a cow town anymore. And try to create a sense of place. Yeah, this is a, my wife has this great description. She calls it, she says, we're the edge of the middle. And and that's what I'm trying to get at, is to create a sense of place so people have an idea of what Columbus is. Because everyone knows, if you're traveling, if you tell people you're from Columbus, the first thing they do say is Buckeyes. And that's a big part of who Columbus is. But I guess I'm trying to get us beyond that with this series.
My guests, Andrew Welsh Huggins, a legal affairs reporter with the Associated Press in Columbus, and the author of his first novel, Fourth Down and Out, and Andy Hayes Mystery. Also, David Giffels, he teaches English at the University of Akron and creative nonfiction in the Northeast Ohio Master of Fine Arts program. But his latest book is The Hard Way on Purpose, Essays and Dispatches from the Rust Belt. Stay with us. We'll continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. We're talking about writing about a place, in this case, Ohio. In one case, the city of Columbus, and in another, the city of Akron. Andrew Welsh Huggins is with us. He's the author of a new novel. It's called Fourth Down and Out, an Andy Hayes Mystery. It's the first in what will be a series of mysteries starring Andy Hayes, who's a very interesting, funny, complex character that I'm looking forward to getting to know more of. David Giffels, he teaches English at the University of Akron and creative nonfiction in the Northeast Ohio Master of Fine Arts program. His latest book is The Hard Way on Purpose, Essays and Dispatches from the Rust Belt, and that would be particularly Akron, Ohio. If you have a question or comment, you can join the conversation. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. Is there a certain self-consciousness when you're writing nonfiction about a city like, about the city that you live in, Akron, or did you kind of get over that as a columnist?
No, there's an extreme self-consciousness about the city's inherent self-consciousness, because places that have had an easy identity, you know, that were known for something that no longer are, become unusually self-conscious. Akron and Cleveland both deal with this all the time. Like, we, you know, Cleveland was known for steel and, you know, is known for its sports teams, which always lose. So they're always like very self-aware. And Akron was known as the rubber capital of the world for most of the 20th century and then suddenly not to be known for that, which is why I think the LeBron James thing was such a big deal, because it wasn't like we wanted to just be known for him, but to have the whole world know one name and he's from Akron gives you something to hang your hat on.
And in your first essay, which in the book, which is about LeBron James and his relationship to the city and the region, there was a little part of it that you're talking about how you met up. You didn't meet up with him, but you saw him at a press conference or something like that. You tried to relate to him.
Yeah.
I went to your high school, too.
Right. We went to the same high school. Yeah, LeBron James and I have this unique connection. We're the only two people, I think, in the history of the world who went straight from St. Vincent St. Mary High School in Akron, Ohio, to the Cleveland Cavaliers. He was the first pick in the NBA draft, and I was an entry-level ball boy. But yeah, there is. When you're confronted with a bigger than life celebrity, I think it's a natural instinct to want to sort of measure up, you know, even on a human level. And I think it's an especially male instinct too. Like, I wonder how tall I am compared to LeBron James. You know, he's a sophomore in high school at that point. So yeah. It was when he came into the Beacon Journal newsroom to accept an award. But yeah, you become fascinated with this person who doesn't seem like a real person. They seem like a fictional character, but they're also like, you know, he very, very self-consciously himself self-identifies as an Akronite. He's got the local area code tattooed on his arm. He refers regularly to this being his home. He still lives in Akron, just outside of Akron. So, you know, those things are important in ways that go well beyond celebrity. We did the same thing with the Black Keys, the rock band from Akron,
right.
Who also similarly very self-identify with being from Akron and proud of it. And we need that because we've been, you know, an easy punchline for so long.
Andy Hayes, your fictional character, Andrew Welsh Huggins, is also bigger than life. A lot of people almost think of him as mythological or sort of a legend of this guy's name. And when they see him and he shows up in person somewhere, it reminds them of all that's bad about the Buckeyes.
Well, he has this reputation, and I play with it a little bit. I mean, there's a bit of parody in it, but he oftentimes will be in places, and people like, you know, grandmothers will just come up to him and stop just short of spitting in his face for wrecking what was a great team at the time. And then there are other people who just. There's a couple characters who just know who he was and still admire him despite what he did. And, you know, would people remember, would they recognize a disgraced quarterback 20, 25 years later? I don't know, but I felt like I wanted to have some fun with it. And I wanted him to capture everything that is out there right now about not just Ohio State football. I'm not picking on Ohio State football, but the good and the bad of college sports, the that intense loyalty that it creates for a team. You know, there's no site like Ohio Stadium with 100,000 people on a Saturday.
Agreed.
But also some of the downsides of college sports and the pressures it puts on a lot of people, from the players to super fans.
There are ex-players who are thugs. There are also ex-players who achieve great things, and Andy Hayes in particular is a very, very bright person. It's sort of like you're working to dispel the myth that they're just dumb jacks a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, part of him is in a tradition of kind of wisecracking private eyes, and I didn't want him to be someone who's sort of like a big ox being led around. I mean, he is hopefully a witty guy. He's a little bit sensitive, and some of his humor comes out of that because he's endured 20 years of very hard for him to walk into a bar without people saying something, throwing barbs at him. So I think he's developed this ability to wing that comeback at people, and I think that's a little bit part of his humor. But, you know, in the book and in the coming books, he's a well-read guy. He's going to be reading different books. He's more of a history biography person as opposed to a fiction person. But yeah, that's all part of creating, I think, a well-rounded character who, you know, still comes from this particular arena of being an ex-football player.
I asked that you read something from your book. Did you bring something to read?
I can read. I can. Yeah, why don't let me just read from the start, and I'll bleep out any bad words.
Okay.
So this is just from chapter one. Before I start, let me just explain that you'll hear quickly because his name is Andy Hayes, his nickname has automatically become Woody Hayes. Hey, Woody Hayes. I was almost home when I heard the man's voice. I shouldn't have turned around. Partly because I haven't been called that name by anyone I consider a friend in close to 2 decades, and partly because events earlier in the evening should have alerted me to trouble. But turn around I did, and that's when he hit me full in the face with the flash of a cell phone camera. Woody Hayes, the man repeated, I don't believe it. I stepped back, eyes adjusting in the dark to the flash, and made out a man in a ski mask a few feet in front of me, holding a phone in one hand and something I couldn't quite make out in the other. What the heck, I said, and instinctively raised the baseball bat I keep in my van and had carried with me on the short walk to my house just in case, because of what happened earlier, which shows what a doofus I was to turn around in the first place. That's when I saw the shotgun.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. That's Andrew Walsh Huggins. He's reading from his new novel, Fourth Down and Out, an Andy Hayes mystery. We're talking about writing about plays today. For those of you out there listening, if you have a favorite book that includes the setting of Ohio, give us a call. Tell us about it. 614-292-8513. David Giffels, did you get the memo on reading something from your book?
No, but I started thinking about it as soon as you asked Andrew. Yeah, but I can't do a cliffhanger like Andrew just did, though. So, yeah, let me flip. I'm going to flip to something that's not directly about Ohio, but it's the beginning of the chapter about my experience as an NBA ball boy. It was my first job, a strange job, at a time when the Cleveland Cavaliers had not arguably, but literally the worst owner in the history of American sports, Ted Stepien. And this was in the sort of the kind of not the NBA we know now, not nearly as slick or polished. There really was no other way to deal with the situation than to look the tall, naked black man directly in the eye. He wanted a hot dog. I couldn't just ignore him. In a situation like that, the best option is to go with direct, locked-on, no-gaze-wandering eye contact. Even so, for a preternaturally shy 17-year-old who still had trouble with any public encounter that included anything other than pretending to be somewhere else, this was going to be a challenge. Add to this that I'd had little actual contact with any black people in my mostly sheltered lifetime, nor with naked people in general, and my discomfort was as urgent as it was complex. Mustard? I asked.
That's a pretty good clue.
His was better.
Well, it was fiction, but wanted to ask both of you how, to what extent you're driven to authenticity when writing about a place in fiction. Andrew?
It's a good question. And, you know, when I wrote my book about the three terrorists in Columbus that were prosecuted in the mid-2000s, I mean, obviously that was a nonfiction book and I was trying to get everything right. But similarly, in this book, I probably even more so was fixated on making sure that I got the details about Columbus right. I mean, I took a tour of Ohio Stadium. You know, they were very kind and let me in because I wanted to know how many steps there were at a certain place. And I wanted to make sure I knew exactly where the signs that talk about the various national championships were and the Heisman Trophy winner. So I really wanted to get that right. There are some made up places in this. In this book, there is a fictional college called McCullough College, which is named for a college professor of mine, Bill McCullough. So you're not going to find that on a map of Columbus. But at the same time, I really paid close attention to where Andy drives. Could he really make a left turn there? Could he go this way? It was very important for me to get those details.
Because
right.
You knew someone was going to pick apart eventually. You're actually having tours of, is it German Village?
We are doing a tour of German Village on June 1st. Come on down. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to show you where all the action happens.
Cool.
Yeah. What about with nonfiction? I'm never going to be able to, well, I suppose I could go and check out the facts of your stories, but your essays, but how about you?
They're factually correct. I'll just set the record. No, it's different. Like, I think the instinct is almost the opposite. I think for to write fiction, you're internalizing the details, and so the specificity is helpful to make your fictional place seem real. And for my purpose, the specificity is external. Like, I'm trying to write very specifically about a place that represents other places with a similar set of experiences. Mm-hmm. So constantly throughout the book, even though I am very specific in my details about Akron, I constantly use the phrase like places like this. Mm-hmm. And I'll use other cities that I know have a similar kind of experience, because I didn't want to write a book that was only about Akron. I wanted to write a book about the entire Rust Belt.
But you also use phrases, and correct, you know, if I'm not exactly right, but you'd have to live here to know what I'm talking about.
Right.
Kind of a thing.
Yeah. But I think if you go to Appleton, Wisconsin, or if you go to
I lived in Appleton, Wisconsin.
So, you know, you have to live there to understand what you're talking about.
Yes.
And so they know their parallel version of that. So you don't want to be it's part of this constant, like this identity crisis, is you don't want to be anonymous. You don't want to be misunderstood, as we have been for a generation. And yet, as soon as someone else tries to define you, you bristle at it. You're like, no, we are the only ones who really understand that. And so it's part of the identity crisis. And it's kind of hypocritical, but it's real. I mean, I know I've heard other people say the same thing. You know, Cleveland is so used to having been a punchline, the butt of jokes, the burning city and all that. And yet they don't want anyone to, you know, we can make fun of ourselves, but you can't.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get the Cowtown thing. I've never understood it. But people who grew up here in Columbus, that's something that they feel really comfortable with tossing around. But I never saw it.
Yeah, and same with me. I mean, it was just something I had always heard. I mean, Columbus, you know, was literally a Cowtown a long time ago. And it's kind of the way David put it is perfect. It's, you know, it's okay for us to kind of dig at ourselves, like, oh, we're just this little cow town and there's not much to us. Come and take a load off. Just enjoy yourself. But if people come in from outside and say, Columbus, what a cow town, that kind of stings.
Yeah. And, you know, top on that, the Republican National Committee dissing the city.
Yes, they did.
They did.
Yes, they did.
Marianne and Mainville?
Hello.
Hi, Marianne.
Hi. I have two books I actually thought of. There is a trilogy called The Awakening Lands by Conrad Richter. It's actually a Pulitzer. It's the trees, the fields, and the town. And it kind of takes you from her coming from Pennsylvania around 1799 or so in through the all the way in through the railroads.
Uh-huh.
Are you familiar with that, any of the authors?
No, I know A Light in the Forest, his other book. Yeah, but I don't know that trilogy.
Conrad Richter, yeah. He also wrote a, I'm trying to think. There was one that, I can't remember the actor's name, never mind. This was actually made into a miniseries, one of the first ones, and the actress who played Bewitched was in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Back in the 70s. And actually, it's kind of interesting because Jane Seymour played one of the secondary characters, the sister of the main character, Sayward. And one of the other sisters' names was Sully. And I thought it was interesting that she went on to have kind of a pioneer show she was in with the other character being Sully.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Well, Marianne, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Take
Bye.
Care. Bye. Have you read a lot of books that use Ohio as a setting? Andrew?
I've read a lot of, well, yes, and I've read a lot of books that are set in Columbus, a lot of nonfiction books, some wonderful books. Mm-hmm. A lot of people probably know Bob Green, who has written several books about growing up in Bexley and about Bexley and Columbus.
Right.
But Molly O'Neill, the food columnist in the New York Times, has a wonderful book about Columbus called Mostly True. Will Haygood, I hope people know who that is, has a
Washington Post
writer. Response, kind of, it was his story that created The Butler.
Right.
Wonderful book about growing up in Columbus. So I read as much about Columbus and Ohio as I can, for sure. I mean, prize winners of Defiance Ohio, another great, great book. So, yeah, I mean, of all the books I try to read, I try to keep books about Columbus and Ohio circulating at the top.
And David Giffels, what about Akron?
Yeah, well, you know, I teach this class in Ohio literature, so I think about this a lot. So, yeah, there are, I mean, there are, I don't know how, if there's a canon of books about Akron, but yeah, I think every city has its set of books. But what's interesting is, you know, there isn't really a definitive Ohio writer. Like, people always mention Sherwood Anderson in Winesburg, Ohio, and that's, it's a really great
well, it's an
book,
easy
and it's an easy one, but it's about a particular it's about the pre-industrial Ohio, and it's also about isolation. It's about small town isolation. So that's one aspect of Ohio. But then I also teach Beloved by Toni Morrison, which is an entirely different set of Ohio experience of the post-slave Cincinnati. And so there isn't like the you know, like I think some places have their defining writer. You know, Robert Frost is the Northeast. And I don't know if there's I think it's partly because Ohio is so different in each of its regions.
Diverse,
that nobody could say, you know, it's nature writing, you know, but there's beautiful parts of Ohio that are very natural and or that it's, you know, the ultimate sort of urban industrial writer because that doesn't reflect you know, Columbus, it doesn't reflect the part of the state that's Appalachian. So so I think it's the void of, you know, a true Ohio theme or Ohio writer is as interesting as if we could talk about one person.
Well, it kind of leaves the door open.
Yeah.
There's lots of opportunity.
Yeah.
For points of view. David Giffels, thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate you coming
thanks
in.
Thanks for having me.
David Giffels, he's author of a new book. It's called The Hard Way on Purpose, Essays and Dispatches from the Rust Belt. And also Andrew Walshaug and you as well. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Andrew is legal affairs reporter with the Associated Press in Columbus and author of the novel, his first novel, Fourth Down and Out, an Andy Hayes mystery. Both of my guests today are featured authors in the upcoming Ohioana Book Festival. For more information, go to the link at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We'll continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. We're talking about Ohio as it is reflected in literature, fiction, and nonfiction. If you have an idea about fiction or nonfiction that involves Ohio and you'd like to share it with us, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. David Weaver, he's executive director of Ohioana Library and the Ohioana Book Festival coming up soon. If you want a link to know more about that, you can go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides. He's with us right now. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. Pleasure to be with you.
And still with us, David Giffels, author of The Hard Way on Purpose, Essays and Dispatches from the Rust Belt. He will be a featured author at the upcoming Ohioana Book Festival. We've been talking about writing about place today, specifically writing about Ohio. The authors that are featured at the festival every year, they don't always necessarily focus on the Buckeye State, but often there's an element there.
Yes, there is. And we actually, it's fortunate. I mean, we have nearly 100 authors. And like I said, they're writing in every literary genre from essays such as David Giffels to mysteries that Andrew Walsh Huggins is doing and children's novels and everything, you know, but they're connecting thread is that they're all from Ohio, but not necessarily that their subjects are Ohio. And so it's really good. But we do have a panel which is specifically called Around the Buckeye State, Stories from Ohio. And it's David Myers is going to be there talking about his story of the Ohio Penitentiary and ghost stories of Ohio. It's interesting the different things, you know, which come up with the Buckeye State. There's every kind of imaginable topic.
And David was mentioning earlier, maybe it's because Ohio has so many different parts to it.
Yes.
And that there's so much to talk about. If you're writing about Toledo, that's going to be very different than the Akron experience, mm-hmm. even though they're both Rust Belt cities.
Right.
I lived in Toledo for a couple years, and I just know it would be very, very different.
Yeah.
Much more, you know, the mob and, you know, Detroit and all of that kind of stuff. So there's never a shortage, right, David?
No, there's never a shortage. I was just thinking about the fact that last year at the time of the book festival, the authors you had on from the book festival all talked about Amish fiction and what a huge right. thing that is. And well, again, this year we'll have
Amish Paul romance, Galson.
Paul Galson is going to be on. We're going to have like Karen Harper. We're going to do a whole thing which is just about the genre of Amish mysteries. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing.
Rick in Lancaster, you're on the air. Hi, Rick.
Hey, hi, Ann. Great show, as usual.
Thanks.
I wanted to ask you guys if you could address Donald Ray Pollack, P-O-L-L-A-C-K, and his growing body of work. I've only personally read the first collection of short stories and then his first novel. It's my understanding that this is spawning a sort of a new genre known as hillbilly noir.
Oh.
So, yeah, you can talk about the ugly underbelly of southeastern Ohio there, and I'll take your answers off the air. Thanks a bunch.
All right, thanks,
and
Rick.
Actually, those are his only two books, so okay, you've got it down.
And actually, I was going to say, I just talked to Donald not too long ago. He's actually working on his third book, which hopefully will be out in the year. And it's set in the small town of Medea or something, Ohio, but it's near Chillicothe. Again, because he writes about his experience. He's from Chillicothe, so he writes about that area down there, Mead paper. In fact, it's set in Mead, Ohio. That's right, and that struck me. But it's about the influenza epidemic, you know, of 1918. So he's kind of going back and doing a historical kind of fictional piece, you know.
And there hasn't been a lot written about that because so many people died.
Yes.
There weren't a lot of people around that wrote about it, and mm-hmm. it was so horrific. It's an interesting topic in and of itself, the influenza. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually, if you've read Donald Ray Pollack's work, probably the best thing that could happen to you is to die of influenza.
Yeah.
It's pretty brutal. I really love his writing a lot.
Yeah. So, and I, you know, again, here's the thing, like, where I don't think people ever even knew there was such a town as Knock'em Stiff. Until Donald wrote, you know, that book and everything. So it's amazing. Right. He was a featured author 2 years ago with The Devil All the Time, which was his novel. So so again, it's his first two works were kind of like out the gate and everything, really got a great acclaim. So now I think he said, I'm really feeling the pressure after the first two books did. So do you ever feel pressure of things of that nature? So
oh, yeah, you're always, you know, when one thing's finished, you're already fretting about the next
what
one.
Have you done for me lately?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's like daily news business, though. Yeah. That's the way it is. Richard in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Richard.
Hi there. You commented before about the cowtown image of Columbus and as an outsider. You mentioned that. And mm-hmm. I'm from New York originally, so I grew up in a suburb of New York City, which, as you know, is not like saying from a suburb of Columbus. But, yeah, like there are actually cities next to cities there. But in any case, I mean, I wasn't unfamiliar with the country, but I came here for college in 1966, and I remember I was riding with one of my friends from New Jersey. He also came out here from the East. And a lot of East Coast kids came here because the school was cheap compared to, you know, the big schools on the East Coast. But I remember Chops was his name, and we're driving by Olentangy Road, and the university farms were right there at the time. And he said, "Look, cows!" You know, like this was a revelation. Mm-hmm. And you know, the thing is that, yeah, if you turned around, you could look over the cows and see downtown Columbus. So, yes, that's to some of us, that's, oh, well, that's where you got Cowtown. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but it was just to him, it was a revelation that there were like cows, right? In the city. Yeah.
That's where meat comes from.
Yeah.
Eureka.
That's where my hamburger comes
from. He's ready for college
from.
Now.
All right. Richard, thanks a lot. You've put it in perspective. I get it now. Okay. Yeah, okay. All right. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call too, 614-292-8513.
And I was going to say that you can tell people who have been in Columbus for a certain period of time, like me, I've lived here all my life, we still call the Lincoln Electara the AIU building. And if you call it the, which was the American Insurance Union, which built the building
you
to be their headquarters.
You do still call it the AIU building,
we
though, really?
Old timers will still call it the AIU building. We don't call it the Lovec Tower and stuff. So,
but you probably, know, that's one of the things, like that, how I define the Midwest is it's the place where we call things by what they used to be. And I think that is, you know, that's that sense of place, you know.
And, Andrew Welsh Huggins in his book that we were talking about earlier, Fourth Down and Out, make sure that he mentions the old post office. It's now a law office, but it was the old post right. office, and so on and so forth. Edifice is very important. It's everything, you know, a lot of it's crumbling and rusting and so yeah. forth, but edifice matters a lot. And you go to, into a lot of detail about the edifice of Akron.
Yeah, and we were talking off the air a little bit about the personality that especially the former industrial cities have. Is very important. I mean, the you know, like one detail I use in the book is the fact that I grew up thinking that there was a kind of sandstone that was black, not realizing that all the sandstone in the central city was soot, had absorbed soot over the years, and so that becomes part of my defining aesthetic. And the architecture of Columbus has such a different personality. And I did a reading in Cincinnati last month and got to spend some time roaming around, and it has its own personality, and that's important. And one of the things that I think, you know, especially the cities I write about, the post-industrial Rust Belt cities, is that they have tended to keep these really well-built but suddenly not useful buildings and find readaptations for them. Because to lose that is to lose a sense of you know, of your pain. And I think you need to know your pain to kind of really have a soul as a city. As much as you need to know your success and you need to know the things that you're proud of, you need to know the things that hurt, and that's what makes these places seem real.
One of my favorite things in Columbus is the archway that used to be from the old train station,
yes.
which was gone long before mm-hmm. I arrived, and it makes me sad every time I see it.
Yes.
There's a story there.
Yes. And the fact that, you know, that so they tore down this thing in the late 1970s to build the Ohio Senator and Battelle Center and the first Hyatt Hotel that was here. But then later on, because people loved that structure, they build a couple a little like right close to there. So there are some restaurants and fewer things that have the edifice. And somebody said, why didn't they just save the original structure and reuse it, you know, but again, that's it happens a lot of times, you know. I mean, I'm very grateful, you know, that the fact, you know, the old Lazarus department store is finding new uses in urban
yes.
art space, and mm-hmm. because that was the anchor of the downtown, you know, was the Lazarus department store. I'm sure there was a store in like in the heart of downtown Akron.
Absolutely. I think every Midwestern city has yes. its downtown department store that is no longer a thing.
I liked Apartment X. It's where you. It was, I don't know if your brother still lives there or not.
My friend, yeah.
Your friend,
yeah.
Okay. It talked about kind of a reuse movement going on in Akron, too.
Yeah, well, it wasn't a movement. He was literally
he was
the only person living downtown. He just cleared out all the junk out of this warehouse and called it a loft. But it was a dump. But it was amazing because, you know, there was this period, it wasn't that long, but there was this period that I just happened to stumble into as a young person, as a college age person, when downtown Akron was just like Beirut. I mean, it was just desolate. And so he moved into this place and we would have, you know, little roof parties on the roof of this building. And, you know, it was like we had this entire post-apocalyptic landscape to ourselves. He would set up a slide projector in his window and projected onto the building across the street, and we'd have our own little like movie shows, and not a single car would pass by. The cops didn't care. You know, it was just it was an amazing experience to have, and you know, to be young and dumb and not aware of the economic and social implications of all that loss, it just seemed exciting and full of possibility. It was really, really a great time.
What other what other authors are going to be there that write about Ohio?
Well, besides P.L. Gauss, David Myers will be there. He writes nonfiction every year. And gosh, I didn't bring in my program. I should have brought in my program. I gave David a copy of my program.
David Giffels has a
David
handy
Giffels,
program.
You know, is going to help me out and everything. So, because we got.
Let me ask you, David Weaver, are there more people writing about, when I say writing about Ohio, it sounds like as if, are more people writing with Ohio as the backdrop? And David Giffels, actually, Ohio is kind of the main character. Akron is in your work.
You know, I would broaden it a little bit. It's been interesting. Just this spring, three pieces that I know about have taken on this topic of a potential renaissance in Midwestern literature, using with Ohio very much a part of that conversation. And in fact, Columbus Alive just had a piece about the fact that there's a publishing renaissance going on in Ohio. That's, you know, that things that were in Brooklyn are finding their way back into the middle of the country, which I think is really interesting. So I think, yeah, people not only are writing about Ohio, but are becoming more aware of writing about Ohio, Michigan, the middle of the country.
And it's interesting, the different things, you know, he's not at the book festival this year, but a friend of David's and mine, Dave Lucas, from Cleveland, won the Ohio and a Book Award for poetry for a collection called Weather, which was all about the climate in Cleveland. If you can imagine an entire book of poems that is about
poetry. Well, we spend enough time talking about the weather in Ohio. There might as well be a book of poetry.
Yes, the only place in the world where talking about the weather isn't code for boring social conversations.
Yes.
It's actually the most dramatic part of our lives.
Yeah. I actually found everything. You know, Nathan Crook is going to be here and has written a book about, you know, a culinary history of the Great Black Swamp, which is part of Ohio's history that I didn't know about. Wendy Coyle, Legends of Lost Treasure in Northern Ohio. So very, very fast ghost stories with Jane Trezillo.
There's always a good ghost story collection up there.
And a very fascinating book, Alejandro Campos, who is a writer whose background is El Salvador, Panama, and China, has written a book called I, Legal in the USA, not illegal, but legal in the USA, about her experiences as a Hispanic American here, because, you know, again, as a legal alien, because, again, everyone automatically assumes, you know, certain things about you if you are a Hispanic American, everything that, are you? And so very fascinating book, you know, that she has written, you know, first time writer and stuff. So we're very excited. You know, we get a really great mix of people. And again, some use Ohio as their theme, and then some are just Ohio writers who are writing on a broader scope.
David Giffels, before I let you go, just how is Akron these days?
Akron's just fine. In fact, it was sunny there when I left this morning. I didn't hit rain until I got to Columbus.
Oh, okay.
But no, Akron is, it was one of the first cities to really hit bottom in that Rust Belt period. And so it, by virtue of that, it was one of the first cities to kind of start to find its way back out of it. So, you know, the places that I write about, which Akron is obviously my model, are all kind of coming out of a generation of loss and of identity crisis and a certain kind of civic despair, and coming out of it in interesting ways with scars and, you know, a sense of darkness, but also this sense of hardened optimism. And so, you know, Detroit, there's so much been written about Detroit in the past couple of years. And it's another city that, you know, can't be written off for dead because it hasn't died. And so Akron is coming back in an interesting way, but not in a way that we can just say, you know, there's an easy resolution to any of those kinds of civic experiences.
Well, thanks for joining us today to talk about it. Really
thanks
appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
That is David Giffels. He is the author of a new book. It's called The Hard Way on Purpose, Essays and Dispatches from the Rust Belt. He will be at, he is a featured author in the upcoming Ohioana Book Festival. For more information, go to the link at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. David Weaver, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, Ann.
David Weaver, he's the executive director of the Ohioana Library and the Ohioana Book Festival. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.